Attention, calling all whispering hunties. Oh, grrr.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Nijon, a self-proclaimed semi-drag race expert.
And I'm Nick. I've never watched it before.
And together we are whispering hunties.
Well, hello, everybody.
Hey. Hey,
hi.
Y'all.
We How are you doing? Back. We are back again with a U.S. Drag Race episode
of Whispering Hunties.
New. Well, actually, sorry, guys. There is no new episode. There's just a COVID special.
So it's a new episode for us about old things, about this pandemic, about how they've been doing, seeing some stubble, because they can grow a little stubble for the interview.
I know. And I feel so bad for not being able to give you Gloria's take whole.
The whole story.
The whole story. Ugh, I will learn. I will learn. So there's no whole story for this episode because nothing happened.
There's nothing to hold. The whole story is that they're in pandemic mode. They're having to put it together during quarantine. Very informative and cool, and I always love a behind-the-scenes peek. Mm-hmm. I love documentaries, so I'm into it. But at the same time, I'm ready to watch Snatch Game.
Absolutely.
We have to wait a week for that, but...
Anyway, but so on the obviously we're still going to release the whole story from the previous episode via Instagram and Facebook and all those other things. But for this week, we're really just going to reflect on COVID, people, because it's been real. And thanks to RuPaul's Drag Race, we got to take a step back and really see what all of us went through. I mean, it was so. I mean, we're humans, so of course we relate to one another, but like this was really an episode that really took me back and helped me kind of like process what I went through last year.
Yeah, and it's kind of honestly a little bit nice to break up the season in this way and like show us a little bit of that, because since the start of the show, we've been like, oh, this is a pandemic season, like they had to do all this, but you don't really think about it. You're just watching the show. So to interrupt the season with this documentary is like, it really frames it as like, no, it really was pretty tough to get all this stuff together and have to develop it to be one of the first shows back in production during a pandemic. And it was nice to see just what we're going to try to get back to with some of these little clips of performing nights. And I really loved seeing everybody, little tiny clips of audition tapes. I thought that was amazing and inspirational. So there's a lot of use to this. Even and I love that they were episode.
No, I totally agree. And I love that they were celebrating digital drag.
Yes.
And yes. I just realized these must be the highest paid queens in RuPaul's Drag Race history, because I feel like there are mini prizes, there are prizes, and then like all the queens have been on at least like 4 episodes.
At this point, yeah, you definitely have gotten to be on 4 because of the documentary and the 3-part opener before anybody got sent home. Yeah. So that's a good way to kind of instill a bit of like money. I mean, just money, paying
much,
them.
Much
in
needed
a
money.
In a much harder time to produce the show.
Yeah.
Oh, shoot. Dang it. There was something that made me think of that I wanted to mention, but I can't remember it now.
Well, we have a whole episode that you can listen to where we talk about these things.
Yes.
So we're back again with our guests, Jonathan Valdez and Griffin Leeds. And it was a kiki. We literally stopped recording the episode and talked for almost another hour about even more things. And I learned things about Pokemon that I did not want to learn. But when you're hanging out with your friends, you let them talk about
Sometimes you're going to hear that. Yeah. You're going to hear about Pokemon.
I actually really do like Pokemon, but I don't play it anymore. But that being said, grab a snack, sit back, let it wash over you.
Let our whispers fill your ears.
And get into your U.S. dose of whispering hunties. Hunty.
kids. It's the Honey Leave It Show. We just want to say thank you. We just passed the 3,000 download mark, which is a big deal for a new podcast. And so we're just really, really grateful. If you've never heard of the Honey Leave It Show, it's a comedy podcast about sex. So if you like laughing and you like sex, you should come and listen to the show. If you don't like to laugh and you don't like to have sex, please don't bother. You won't enjoy it at all. The Honey Leave It Show has new episodes every Friday on Stitcher, SoundCloud, Spotify, and Apple, of course. Looking forward to seeing y'all there. Bye.
Normally, on the podcast, we do a section that's called COVID Wisdom, but we had a whole COVID episode. So what we're going to do is we're just going to hop into COVID. If you have some wisdom that you're gaining from this time, we need to like just get it all out, but we're going to just hop right into this COVID nonsense because this episode was triggering. Do you know what I mean? When they went back to December, January, 36 weeks still filming, I was like, oh my God, I still remember what it was like when I could just go and get drunk
Especially in New York, the club.
And, you know, and like be like a sloppy mess, you know, like the days before lockdown.
Mm-hmm. I thought I was the only one. I had tweeted last night that I was like, I hadn't really seen like a full in-depth recap of like the timeline, and we really just lived it because we're barely getting into March. We're still in February. But I didn't expect for it to be that triggering, but I felt a certain kind of way, like, to see it. It was kind of jarring, and I was like, oh, I was shocked that I was shook, because it was. It kind of just brought back. I think I realized how much trauma we're all kind of still processing.
Yeah. Oh, just like Olivia, in not even an amazing outfit, and just, like, bouncing around and lip-syncing in a club. It was like... God, I just really, really do miss that. And I think, yeah, it's times when we see just a little clip like that, that it hits us like, wow, we really are like struggling until we can just have those moments and those lives and those parties and those nights back.
And do you remember like the dumb things that you may have said or like someone may have said around you about Corona? I remember I was like, this is just the flu, like blah, blah, blah. I don't care. Like blah, blah, blah. I'm just going to go to work. I was feeling all high and mighty, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, people really started dying and it really started spreading like wildfire. Yeah. And, you know, as people... Yeah, especially in our area, because like, I don't know how people, it's different for everyone around the world. And I think that coronavirus has like slowly come for everybody. So people can relate now. But to be in New York during March of last year was to be in a apocalyptic shutdown state. You know what I mean? I remember being like, if I get sick, I don't think I can go to the doctor.
Yeah, it was crazy. I remember I was one of the first people for me, and like I was wearing a mask very soon. So I was like on the subway, it'd be me and maybe one person. And I just knew I was like, there's no way this isn't airborne. It's spreading too quick. So like I put on that mask and nobody was really doing it like very early on. And then everything shut down and I didn't leave my apartment for days because I didn't know, like they were like, stay inside. So I was like, okay, I'm taking it seriously. And then when I finally got out, the world was completely different. Like when I went into my apartment and then came back out finally, it was like the last time leaving that world as we knew it. And then going into this new one with like the line at the grocery store and everyone wearing masks. It was so crazy. And then to be in New York City, and if you were staying inside your apartment and all that stuff, all you would hear was silence, which is weird to be in New York, and then the ambulance going like all the time. And it was so crazy.
Oh, God. Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, and what was so, what I loved about the, especially at the beginning, was how they talked about Mona Foote, because I remember when Mona Foote died. And I didn't really know about Mona Foote before she passed, but when she passed, like gay Instagram exploded with people with stories about watching her in drag. All my older gay friends knew Mona really well or like knew of her. And like, it was right around then that like gay friends of mine all like would all say like they knew someone that died that was gay and was probably like HIV positive or had some other type of condition. But like people within my social circle all were like, people were like dropping like flies. And it was this very scary moment where I was like, oh my God, this is like another, not as bad as like the HIV AIDS crisis, but it's another thing that is going to rob us of like a generation of people.
I'm sure there were a lot of echoes with the AIDS crisis and the similarity of fear and the, you know, the misinformation at first and everything, and you know, politically it being ignored or lessened or anything like that. I mean, there are a lot of echoes to that. So yeah, that's an apt comparison.
I think that's why people get so frustrated when people are seem to not take it seriously. And there's a lot of groups, especially older queers, that are like, why, what are you doing? Like, you know, I think a lot of them maybe wish that they had those earlier, even though it wasn't handled properly. But, you know, it was still like they were like, stay inside. And like, no one knew what was going on when HIV AIDS came on the scene. So I think that that's where a lot of frustrations come for certain people. And it is very scary because you don't know. And then I think that there's, you know, a lot of people in the community, like, I feel bad for the daddy community because, like, you know, I'm attracted to a lot of daddies, but like a lot of them that are taking it seriously, like, they haven't been with anyone in since March, like, you know, because a lot of them are high risk and the ones that are taking it really responsible and human touch in general. But just like that, I'm like, why is nobody talking about the daddy community? Because they're like high risk, you know, safe daddies.
I'm happy to talk about the daddy community.
Save the daddies, serve the daddies. Like, yeah. let's do some charity work. Well, daddies are not alone in struggling with that. I've been very single since February of last year, and that is just the way it's gonna be until, you know,
yeah, can work. It's some gonna stuff be out. Madness and this is over.
I know.
Yeah, the girls haven't stopped, but
yeah.
But get ready for STIs to be the new coronavirus.
Antibiotics be damned.
Yeah, because my friend was telling me, like, after was it Spanish influenza, and that was definitely by comparison much more prudish times. Like, I can't, like, it's gonna be a bacchanalia.
You mean like the roaring 20s?
Yeah, you know.
Yeah. Literally.
The moaning 20s. Yeah, we'll call these the moaning 20s.
Exactly.
Right?
Clubhouse, listen, I heard that there was, because everyone's taking all these medicines for X, Y, and Z, that there was like a super herpes or a super something.
Super gonorrhea.
When?
You're like, where? Who is she? Who's that?
Ladies, welcome to the stage, ladies and gentlemen.
Super gonorrhea. She came on the scene like a few months ago at the end of the year because of all these like medicines that people are on. But it's like what they've said for a long time. When you take all the antibiotics that they assign everyone for all the time, like super gonorrhea.
Mm-hmm. Super bugs happen.
Well, yeah. You know,
the question remains, super gonorrhea.
Okay,
and even, the more platonic, like from the episode, they talk about, there was a great moment like where Tina was talking about just like how when they like were in the workroom around other people, like not like knowing about like do you hug, do you not, like everyone's whatever. Mm-hmm. Like I didn't necessarily mean other, like, you know, like yes, it's gonna be like New York's gonna go crazy with all the people who've been sexually oppressed for like a year, but even just things like being able to hug your friends is gonna be so nice.
Yeah. Yes.
It doesn't feel weird, and but
intimacy
nice.
That isn't sex, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I think that's gonna be big.
Well, so something that we talk about in my writing group is that there's levels of love, right? There's kind of like, you know, there's like one, two, like everything either is like a scale of like 1 to 10 or like 4, right? And obviously, like you can like meet someone and start to get to know them, like laugh, right? Then as you get closer, like you can support one another, right? And then there's also like you can give them physical comfort, you can hug them, you can dance with them, you know, blah blah blah. And then I guess 4 would be like hooking up with them or whatever, because that's like the most intimate
home run.
Whatever. And we're kind of missing like the top ones unless you're in a committed relationship and you're not fighting because you've been trapped with one another for too long. And you know, it is going to be a learning curve. And but like what we can see on the show is that the amount of joy that is waiting for everyone at the end of all this is astronomical. Like, I mean, they were all like bickering and like, you know, like angry, you know, in their, you know, in their feels, but like the moments of joy in the show are fast and furious. And you can tell that like a lot of the connections are very genuine. Mm-hmm. Also so cute. So Kimora Hall is now Kimora Holly Mon Diamond. And she's been adopted by Tamisha.
Oh, really? And
yeah. We were talking about this on the on Hunty Whispering Wednesdays this week. And I'm so glad this is happening because on this episode, we got to see how starved Kimora is for love in so many parts of her life. And I'm not saying that she doesn't have friends and that there isn't love that exists in her family. But I do think that... in watching what happened on the show, but also this particular part where she talks about how her mom reacted to her coming out as a gay person, and then how when she went away on the show, she was also having trouble describing what she was doing. I was like, she really needs a community. And I'm sure that she probably had this from her first drag mom before her drag mother passed away. She really needs a community that tells her, no, you are loved. You are special. You are perfect just the way you are. She needs that positive feedback because it's been so absent from her like life experience.
Yeah, I think that it's, you know, people also the community, but then the community of also friends and that camaraderie that you have within a niche community. Because going back to the Smarties campaign, like I was so fortunate to be able to be on a set with other people that I didn't really know that weren't my immediate friends. So, and I didn't realize even how starved I was. I was like, I hadn't really been like with gays in person in forever. So it was so much fun to like Kiki and we were doing the makeup and we were sharing clothes and we were, you know, gossiping and then the Britney and the Gaga and the, you know, everyone was playing on the music. And so that is stuff that, you know, like going to the gay clubs and stuff, I think that that's what a lot of people haven't been in so long, they don't even realize they're missing that. And then when they get that first moment of it happening, I think that's when it's going to kind of flood. Because when I left set, I was like, I didn't realize how much I needed that, you know?
I hope we come back into it. Obviously the queer community is flawed in a lot of ways, and there's a lot of interpersonal stuff that we inflict on each other that's completely unnecessary. And I wonder if like, kind of as like we saw kind of like the microcosm of that Drag Race cast, that in a similar way, kind of what you're speaking to, Jonathan, that like once this is over, that maybe we'll be a queer community that's like a lot more quick to be kind to each other and be like, that's like that, right. You know, that Kiki, that enjoying this music, that like being silly with each other, like that's like what this should be about. And not like the other bullshit and other, you know, the bottom shame that we were talking about at the beginning of the episode. Like, what, like, it's like, why are we doing all that? Let's just like, don't we, have we not realized like how much like this connectedness is so much more important? I don't know.
Yeah. It's like when you're at the club and that one song came on and everyone would be like, yes! And like live their life. Oh my God. Yeah. I miss that. Yeah.
Well, I actually think that they did have a moment where they started to address this because, you know, when they started talking about George Floyd, I just, it reminds me that like 2020 was like an astronomical, like, you know, sea change kind of year.
Yeah.
And
she was that girl.
And there are a lot of issues within America, the world, within like race, and then also with trans lives and, you know, inclusivity within the queer community and also racial issues within the queer community. And I thought it was really important that they talk about that they revisit George Floyd and really like kind of like talk about how we should be thinking about it and like how that happened and that we and that there is a space within the queer community and within the drag community to keep talking about it and to keep educating it. This is literally the first time that Olivia has said that she is a Black person on the whole show.
Wow. Yeah.
And I remember being like, what is it? Is she like Pacific Islander? Blah, blah, blah. But now it was like, as a Black drag queen, blah, 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 blah. You know, and I think And I think that, like, it's easy to ignore that if a queen is so well-versed in, like, all of the other cultural things that, like, her racial identity doesn't come up. But a lot of drag queens were doing a lot of really amazing work when like, all the protests were happening. And so it was really beautiful to see them revisit this. And then also to hear Kimora Hall talk about being like, I'm not Chinese, I'm Vietnamese, and I'm still worried about the anti-Asian sentiment that has, like, arisen because of coronavirus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that was important stuff to hit on and remind us of, and just give us another lens that, yeah, these things are inherently political, whether you want to be political or not. And that a lot of people have to face these things that not everyone does have to face, but we all need to know about it, and we all need to hear from them. So that was good.
Would y'all have been able to, because Drag Race was one of the first productions, would you have been able to stay in that room? Was it a week or 2 weeks where they literally just had to be isolated in a hotel room?
I think it was at least 10 days. Yeah, because it was like July 10th, and then, which I just know because it's my sister's birthday, so, like, that stuck to me. And then the 20th is when they started filming. So they did 10 days in a hotel room by yourself, no internet.
Phone, crazy. Yeah.
Question for you guys, what would you bring with you, or what, like, how would you spend 10 days in a hotel room isolated, no internet?
Yeah, a fleshlight, I guess, I don't know.
Girl, I don't
yes,
even know.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I think I'd be in a different mindset because you're there for a reason. So it's like, I don't know, but it's still, that 10 days is a really long time. And the only communication they had was that red folder sliding in and out for, like, the food and, like, their itineraries. That's what I'm like, did the hotel phone room work? Cause I would have started dialing rooms, girl. Like,
Yeah. I mean, really, they were put through the ringer. You have to be in total isolation for 10 days, and then two of you enter the workroom and have to lip sync immediately.
Chop, yeah.
It made it even more, like, of a punch.
Yeah.
After you sat there for 10 days.
They did not take it easy on them. But also, like Gottmik was saying, that after the show was done, they went back into isolation. So, like, you just went back into your room and you couldn't talk to anyone.
And
like,
you had to just process the whole show for 10 days.
Yeah. Well, no. What you could have done differently to not get sent home that week if you went home.
Right.
But I mean,
and then to go from that back into society that was not this, like, amazing, like, paradise bubble that they had,
and you don't get to go tour, you don't get to go do your shows.
Mm-hmm. And even the season before, like, and all the girls, like, because they, if you notice at the beginning of this season, they were kind of promoting the Work the World and the Vegas show. Mm-hmm. And then obviously they stopped doing that because it's no longer.
Yeah. So it's just drive and drag now. I think that I would have brought, like a yoga DVD so I could do yoga. Mm-hmm. I would also have bought like a sound bath, meditation so I could like listen to that. And honestly, I'd be really happy if I had cable. I love watching TV. I could watch TV for hours. And I would also bring a sketchbook. I would bring like multiple blank sketchbooks with like watercolors, and I would just paint and do art. And then like kind of like the art that's right behind me right now. And then when the show aired, I would probably paste like post some of the artwork from what I was doing while I was there. That's what I was doing.
Oh, sure. Right. I mean, it's an opportunity to like really practice your walk, try things on if you're allowed to.
It's like too late to practice their walk. None of these girls can, the girls that can't walk never learn how to do it on Drag Race.
I feel like all those girls should be able to shablam after 10 days with nothing else to do and a bed to practice.
Make
on.
Yourself shablam. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd be like, okay, at the end of this, I gotta be able to do a death drop because. Yeah.
And not gonna lie, I would have gotten so fat because how do they exercise?
Right. That's what I thought. Your circulation and everything.
Like Simone looks gorgeous. How did she not gain at least 5 pounds?
Just like doing laps, just like really quick laps from like door to window, door to window.
Well, maybe they
burpees.
But I was thinking, I was like, well, maybe they take them to the gym. But I was like, why would they take them to the gym? That's like
The worst.
Yeah. And it was like the first production, one of the first, so they didn't know. So they were literally like bubbling it up. But I would be interesting. See, when they do these kinds of specials, I want to know like the logistics. They're like, how did you bring, like, do you, how do you not see in all the seasons, like, how do they not see each other before they walk in? And I guess they did so that they were like trailers. So there's the workroom, but then they also probably each have a trailer to like get ready in.
Yeah. They usually,
which is interesting.
They usually keep them. I mean, the trailer, I think, is new. Before, they used to like literally sit in an office. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you've seen some of the, if you've seen some of the videos before they get in, they're like sitting in someone's office. Like, well, it's like really random, but like, now I think they got them each a trailer because they have to be able to easily sanitize it and do all that stuff. Also, there's no pit crew. I didn't even realize there wasn't a pit crew.
Yeah, I hadn't even thought of it until it was brought up. And I was like, wait, what's wrong with me that I forgot about the pit crew?
And it's because we had UK where there is a pit crew. Or there was a pit crew.
Anne Holland had a pit crew.
Yeah.
But I guess they got rid of it as COVID got more serious.
Yeah. But they are very necessary, even if we forgot that they weren't there.
Well,
they're still very necessary.
They could have still had a pit crew. You know what I mean? Just like,
instead of underwear, they wear masks.
Yeah, but to your point, though, they were like, the pit crew is like a cornerstone of Drag Race, but nobody remembered that they were there, weren't there.
until we figured it out.
Just like this past week on our live, we forgot that Elliot was there.
We forgot that Elliot was still on the TV show. We thought that she'd already been sent home.
Oh, yeah.
How do you feel about Elliot with two T's still being there?
He surprises me sometimes with like, oh, she really pulled it out. Or like, she is a strong drag queen, right? Like, she has strengths, okay? That can't be ignored. But at the same time, yeah, her personality is very abrasive and very divisive. And I'm not super well versed in some of the things she said that have racial undertones to them. But I've heard about those things and I'm like, oh, well, obviously that's unacceptable. And so the conversation has kind of been around like, is it her mental health affecting the way that she interacts with people and that she just ends up stumbling? Because I don't want to believe that she's coming at it with like, fucking like white supremacist mentality. Yeah. I don't think so. I think she's being an idiot sometimes, but
forgive me, maybe I have a blind side. She said things on the show that were coming off or that could potentially be coming from
people
a place
were
of...
saying microaggressions. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say some of those microaggressions, I think it's some people being internet people and being Tumblr about it. But at the same time, we still do have to take it seriously. And if it's coming from like a queen of color saying Elliot said something that was like kind of messed up and she had no idea, or that, or like she needs to know that that's not okay. Yes, definitely listen to those things. Cause I think Candy had something online that she was saying like, yeah, Elliot said this kind of thing and it was fucked up.
Was it like that was like off camera, you mean?
Yeah, gotcha.
Or
that wasn't in the edit of the show.
Well, from what I've seen, from what I've seen, I think we also have to differentiate between like things that people say that are racist. They know that they're saying that they are racist, and I guess this is where like microaggressions come in, and then just like stupid things that white people say
that are ignorant.
Yeah.
And it's more of a point to like either teach them or make fun of them, read them for being dumb about that.
I feel like Elliot's guilty of the latter more so than the former.
I think it's also easier to say things. I mean, if it happened, it happened. But I think it's also easier to notice them if someone doesn't like you. So, of course, they're going to like everything you do is heightened, even if it was just like eating a cookie. Yeah. So they're going to be like, oh, what'd you say, girl?
Yeah.
You know, like that is what it is. And then there was Candy thing in general where she was just like defending herself from everyone because of how, you know, that whole moment with Tanisha.
Because that was just her vibe. I mean, Candy's vibe.
But it's also like the way that you like have to survive. Like I'm telling you, my friends from different parts of like inner city life,
it's true.
Like when they're mad, they know how to fight because that's just, if you don't, you wouldn't have survived. And Candy was like
a big gay person
with a lisp. Like, of course she knows how to fight and defend herself and how to own the room and how to like deflect, you know, it's like a defense mechanism.
Yeah, I agree with that part though, that like minorities in general, that week, you know, there's different levels of getting mad and also just like the way we handle things, because if someone seems heightened, it's not like, I feel like a lot of white people get nervous about that. And they're like, oh my God, why? Like, they're aggressive. And it's like, no, girl, it's just like a cultural thing sometimes. And yeah, then, you know,
expressive, not aggressive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think that there's, you know, there's that whole thing. But then I was like, as far, I think Candy can defend herself verbally, but like, can she throw hands? Cause I don't think she really wanted smoke. Cause when that bee came, she ran.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But this is what I mean by it's a defense mechanism. Like, she knows how to defend herself.
No.
Would she keep doing it in the fight? I don't know.
Yeah. It's like when certain animals, like their fur puffs up, right? Yeah. Like getting all big and wordy and like sassy and stuff. It is. And it comes from a place of where, you know, I think where Candy grew up, she really did have to like be ready to like verbally defend herself a lot.
Yeah.
But we see the real Candy though when she steps back from those moments and reaches out to other girls and is like, and absolves the situation. Or like, she's had conversations that were really nice with Elliot. And that I think is a big signifier of like who the real Candy is. Well, she really is like a good girl.
Yeah.
She's got a good heart.
Also, she's
taking the back.
She really, and she's sensitive. And all those outbursts and things, everybody can do them, and they come from places of sensitivity. Yeah. Because you're feeling sensitive. Mm-hmm.
She also played this game so well. I mean, Candy is so tied up in all the drama. She calls all the shots. She drags all those girls outside for, you know, little candy conversations outside with the freaking face guard. You know what I mean? I mean, like, she's running the goddamn show, and that's why she got double saved, because she's like, I am this TV show. If you kick Candy off, what do you have?
Do you notice that it's oftentimes the big girls that are like the producers? Like, I feel like Eureka did that a lot in her season, where she was always the one being like the Whoopi and the View, and just keeping the like questions going. Okay. Do they ask them to do that, or do they just take on that role?
Or maybe they're just, they have a knack for casting that type of girl. Mm-hmm. You know?
I think I think that's who you are in terms of like the friend group, right? Like, Candy knows how to get the popular girls to kind of like just follow her. Do you know what I mean? Because like, I'm sure.
Which is also can be like a survival thing, right? You got to get like the big time people to be behind you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She got all the pretty girls. She got all the girls with personality.
And
even
Tina.
Even little Simone is just sitting there being like, what, Candy? Mm-hmm. What did you say?
Simone, yeah.
You know.
And Rue, I mean, for Rue to be like, you know, for her to do what she did with Candy, like that, you know, she doesn't do that to everyone, so.
Yeah, but like, Candy Muse was a long time coming for Drag Race, and she's giving us so much. And, you know, all these people that are hating on Candy, it's like, look, you try and be someone's like background friend and get on the show. Mm-hmm. That doesn't happen to everybody.
Mm-hmm. 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 And I think with Aja as a mother, it would be really tough.
Although Candy does have a lot of House of Aja energy, like especially with the thing with Tamisha, like that was straight up Aja realness.
That was very,
you know, the House of Aja likes to, you know, come at people.
It's strong.
They pop
even
off.
Even if they look a little crusty, they still think they're the most beautiful girl in the room. And
that is very, very Aja. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not blaming that. I'm actually championing that. I'm like, get you that kind of confidence where like, even if you look crusty, you're still that girl. Good for them.
There's a lesson there.
Oh my God. Well, okay. So we got a COVID special, apparently, because they're filming the finale of the UK right now. And so they had to interrupt everything so that Rue could finish that. They've already finished filming Australia. And
season three Australia UK already started.
And then so
we're getting Spain soon.
Yeah. And so basically they're filming the finale of the UK right now, and then Rue will come back and quarantine again, then film the finale of this Drag Race.
Yeah. Oh, and also more on that, because Holland season two and Canada season two are casting right now.
Mm-hmm.
And
sent my tape in.
All Star Six is moving
to both.
Yeah. All Star Six is moving to Paramount Plus.
What is that? Moving. And they. I guess
it's just the next thing.
No, but I guess they couldn't take the name, so it's called Queen of the Universe rather than All Star.
No, that's a different show. Two different shows.
Oh, Queen of the Universe is a different show.
All Star Six is going to Paramount Plus. Queen of the Universe is like a Eurovision style drag queen talent show, basically. Yeah.
And that is going to be on Paramount Plus as well.
Paramount Plus, yeah.
Now is that
y'all going to be able to?
Is that a streaming service?
It's coming out March 4th. Is a new launch of a Paramount branded streaming service. Yeah, just like Disney Plus and things like that. But it's everything that's Paramount, a lot of Viacom properties.
Yeah.
Like MTV, VH1, things like Nickelodeon. Logo. And this is not drag related, but Avatar, The Last Airbender universe, it is Avatar Studios now, and they're going to be movies, shows, short form, long form. Oh my God.
All about Avatar?
If you're an Avatar fan. Yes.
Okay, take that Avatar off. Take that off the podcast. I don't know what that is.
I just had to bring it up.
Yeah, okay.
I just had to bring it
up. All right, gamer, whatever.
Avatar specific programming?
See, now we're talking about it. No, this is a Drag Race podcast.
So if you've been watching Drag Race like me on VH1, like live on your computer when it happened, there's a lot of Paramount Plus. Like, and maybe that makes sense now because they're pushing it, but they've done all these big ads where they have celebrities all across the board and then they'll like put them in with like old school cartoons and like they're really trying to make it happen. But I think I might have heard, but I didn't realize that All Stars was going to be on there. But they're doing that with so many shows where, you know, they're like, you love this so much, too bad, bitch. Now you got to pay for it. Thanks.
I know. And it's really scaring me though, because when you take it off of national television that's screening, it becomes, and you hide it behind a paywall, it's going to affect the accessibility. So unless it's free, like Peacock, like this is going to mess some things up.
They're talking about making certain people pay for Twitter, you know, I think.
Or like Twitter exclusivity and
The way my friend, to not derive from the conversation so much, but quickly, the way my friend said it is like, if you're like a Kim Kardashian, like Twitter will like make you pay to be on the platform because you have such a big following.
They should.
Oh, I didn't realize that side of it.
Oh, that's fine. I'm talking about the little people like me. Like I can't afford to pay for Twitter. I can barely afford to pay for my Hulu.
Because I didn't hear that side of it, but also that they're putting an option out almost like Patreon for your tweets.
Or maybe that's what it is.
You can charge people.
For your tweets?
You can charge people to like follow you or exclusive tweets or tweets that are subscriber only.
Exclusive
they're changing
tweets?
Twitter into like an optional payment thing.
Because the other night, OnlyFans was because there are plenty of porn Twitters. Yeah, OnlyFans was trending on Twitter because they were saying that it was turning into OnlyFans.
Gotcha. Yeah, Twitter was turning into OnlyFans
by having like a paywall and exclusive content and stuff like that. Interesting.
It's Twitter being able to like evolve with the times
and trying to monetize it.
Honestly, I've been getting into OnlyFans recently, not for myself to be on it, but just like I've been like poking around on it. The number of people on OnlyFans doing some very expressive content.
I'm shook.
People, I mean, I don't think it's because of the pandemic, because some of this stuff must have been filmed before. But the number of people getting it on OnlyFans.
Actually, I heard that because of the pandemic, the OnlyFans like accounts like skyrocketed because people want to make the coins.
So you mean people are having,
and there's
like,
probably increased demand because people are indoors and sexually frustrated as well.
Life finds a way.
Okay, but also
Jurassic Park.
Also, what's kind of gross is like the amount of like condomless sex on OnlyFans is just, it's really, really, really sad. And I pray the condoms make a comeback. Because gonorrhea is going to be
Invest now.
Super gonorrhea is right around the corner.
Start buying stock in Directs now.
Invest now.
The bareback community is going to come for you.
Let them come for me. Shame on them.
Yeah, let them come for me.
You can express yourself all you want, but not with my body.
Let them come for me for $5.99 every month, unless you're running a special.
Based on the COVID special, whose image was improved?
I think Rosé's image may have improved based on the inclusion that talking about Eddie Gooch, her boyfriend. But that's if it doesn't piss everybody off.
Except for the part where that Rosé said that her partner just did the Drag Race of healthcare. I was like,
that was
Rosé.
So funny. That was so
I love
funny.
You. No.
But it lightens. Yeah, it like makes light of the pandemic in a way. But,
He just did, totally. He just did the Drag Race of nursing. I was like,
and he's like, and that's why our relationship's really strong now.
But I'm like, I'm trying to assume that the tone deafness of it was like a joke and like she's making fun of it. I don't know.
But I think she's trying to say that like there's nothing worse for a drag queen than Drag Race, and there's nothing worse for a nurse than than COVID.
They both did these challenging things at the same time.
Like these horrible things that like no one should really ever have to do because it's quite a harrowing experience.
Who chose to separate because of this job.
That had to be so hard.
Yeah. Rosé's profile has definitely been elevated by the win and then this episode.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Well, the really timing was good. On the show, like, we didn't really know much about her. So I think because I was like, I didn't know she had a boyfriend. I didn't know she had, like, somewhat of a personality. Like, she's great. I mean, she's there, but I think she would have been better on, like, previous seasons. But, like, she's just there for me. Like, I'm not really, like, she's doing everything that she should be doing. But, like, what else? You know what I mean?
I think recutting. I think they recut it to give her more screen time after that win. Do you know what I mean? Because Simone's role on the special was actually quite muted. And then Candy's role was elevated. Candy
had the big part, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then also, oh my God, Tamisha Iman's boyfriend. partner.
Oh, yeah.
Person that was so cute.
I just love Tamisha. I think she left at the right time. Like, it was like, but it was so sad to see her go. And so seeing her, that was nice. Like, seeing some of these queens that we didn't get to see as much as we wanted to, like, even seeing, you know, seeing Kimora more, like, it was a shame that she had to go home first. Like, again, it made sense at the time too, but like, seeing more of her was really great as well. Like, it was just, and it's getting a little more of those queens.
I know. And everyone was like, everyone was like drooling over Joey J's comeback.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, I was. Yeah.
People love Joey J.
I'm legit like annoyed at Joey J now. So I was like, please, girl, like, we already, like, take your chicken feathers and go. Okay.
Oh, I love Joey.
I feel like Joey J needs his own, like, reality series, not because I'm attracted to him, but because he's actually legit funny. He's like, I brought DVDs and porn.
Like, he's just very, like, I think he's very candid, which makes good, like, he's okay. So, like, I'm a big dumb gay bitch, and like, what's up? And like, you know, it's not for everyone. Like, I definitely have my moments, I'm like, oh, Joey, I didn't know you were gay, whatever. But like, it's like, he said it every show. Like, yeah, but
the verse.
He would do great in reality TV for sure, because he's just he's so candid. He's so upfront with people.
And then he like ran from Candy in the work.
Well, okay. But someone said this
intimidating energy.
Someone said this on a podcast that I was watching, and they were like, you know, like, a lot of times now they want to give you like these examples of queer people who are like non-traditional, so like, you know, like the mass queer guy, and then like, I don't know, like the gay politician, whatever. But I'm like, I still love a gay ass Joey J bitch. So that the young people out there who are thinking that the queer side of them that they're afraid to show is like wrong, it's like, no, if you do it 110%, you're just, it's just like, I just love it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, there's just like, you're immediately acceptable. Like, Carson from Queer Eye was always that, you know, head BIC, and I praise him. Oh God. So you guys, we have to end the podcast, but thank you. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like I have my week, and then I have my podcast Kiki, and this is like the brunch that I need.
Mm-hmm. It's like the little weekend ender. Yeah. Until we can actually be at brunch. One of these days.
With a mimosa. We need to maybe potentially like add mimosas to the podcast.
Oh, there you go. Then it will be like
I
an
think
untucked.
That's great. Yeah, I think that's great. That's a great idea.
Oh my gosh.
But I am like, I mean, looking forward to / not looking forward to the vaccine only parties or the vaccine only get togethers. Where it's only your friends who've been vaccinated, who've gotten both shots.
I didn't know about that.
Because all the ones I won't be invited to, or all the ones I'm gonna host.
I have a medical condition where I can't take vaccines because, you know, I like cheese. So, am I still invited? Mm-hmm. Or are you going to cancel
me?
Yeah.
You'll be the one we point and laugh at. Look at that. Somebody without a vaccine.
Oh, my God.
Bring the yacht around.
Okay, before all the vaxxers start coming for us, Griffin, we love you. We need you in our lives. How can everyone find you, stalk you in a way that you consent?
I make it very user-friendly. My handle on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and Venmo is Griffin Leeds. And as I said earlier, I'll be kicking off the first of this Zoom live comedy show, Near Far, Wherever You Are, with my roommate Alex Kennedy at the end of March. I believe that's the 27th, a Saturday. And just in general, once you know we are back in the real world, you can, find about other live shows and other projects and stuff I'll be able to get back into there as well.
Amazing.
Thank you again for having me.
Yeah, and send us links and details so we can help promote when, like, closer to the date. Jonathan, I mean, I feel like you're always with me because I follow you on everything that I can possibly. And I love your fashion commentary. If anyone, like, just go into the magazines and look for Jonathan Valdez giving some Fashion Police commentary, and he is there for you. He is bringing it. He's doing the work that we need to do. But how can they find you, stalk you in a consensual manner?
No, I was saying that I go there so you don't have to. And thank you for the compliment. So it's orangejuiceandbiscuits.com is the easiest, because then you can find everything there. But then I have OJMB the podcast, and it's Jonathan R. Valdez on Instagram. And I wasn't able to get all platforms like Griffin because, you know, everybody ain't able. Or
I mean, neither were we, Hunty Whispering on Twitter, you know, whatever.
Yeah. No, I wish there was a way you can combat it, because someone's sitting on my name. But anyway.
I hate that name squatters.
What are you supposed to message them and, like, pay them?
Literally, that is what happens.
Because Jonathan Valdez on Instagram has been dormant for years, darling, and like zero everything. But anyway, so it's Jonathan R. Valdez Instagram, Jonathan Valdez Twitter, and then, of course, you know, just orangejuiceandbiscuits.com. You can find all sorts of things. And then I have if you click on my link, I have like a link tree. So, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. And I'll get into link trees because they save so much time and energy. Can you imagine like updating your Instagram? Because, like, you know, when you're like dropping links on Instagram, remember how hard that was to do? And then Linktree came along and they just rocked your damn world.
I just got one. I was kind of nervous to get one, but I'm glad that I did.
Oh my God. Mm-hmm. Are you new to the Linktree?
Saves so much paper, too.
Yes.
So stupid.
I know.
Edit that out. Okay.
Now I'm leaving it in. Okay. Listeners, thank you for coming on this journey with us. Please remember to like, subscribe, follow everyone here. Please rate us on Apple Podcasts because it helps a lot. And tip a drag queen, donate to Texas. That is still a thing. And hug someone that you can do without spreading corona. And also call someone and tell them that they're special, you love them, and have a kiki. Because
just dial a random number into your phone.
Well,
and be like, let's kiki.
Hey,
let's have a kiki.
You're special.
All right. Well, till the next week, guys. Bye.
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 Whispering Hunties is not endorsed by World of Wonder, VH1, Viacom, Great Canada, or any of their subsidiaries. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. RuPaul's Drag Race and Canada's Drag Race and all names, pictures, all outfits are registered trademarks and or copyright to their respective copyright holders.
Thanks for listening to the Apocalypse Podcast Network. For more great podcasts, go to apocalypsepodcastnetwork.com. And remember, every time you support one of our sponsors, you're supporting the podcast you just heard.